All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Wednesday, December 6th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. So go over, head on over, DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you started on a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel, DraftKings, NBA. It'll cover you for NFL as well. All covered in the one subscription blanket package, whatever. So it's all covered. DFSR.com/NBA, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. We got a big Wednesday in the NBA. We had a nice moment through one of our other partners, Blake, and Lineup Lab. We have now entered into a new content partnership with Sports Illustrated. So my first piece of content went up on SI.com on Monday. And felt pretty cool, I gotta say. I have seen your name
up. Yeah, see your name in lights, dude.
I texted a couple people and said, SI byline, no take backs. It's gonna be up there forever, unless they just rip it down at some point for, hate rip it down at some point. having a byline on SI after reading that growing up pretty much every week feels pretty cool. So now it's just gonna get published on Sporting News, and that'll be my childhood reading habits covered under on the byline. But
very Playboy, cool. Possibly.
Whoa, buddy. Yeah, nah, oh, yeah, I'm probably. Well, I read it for the article.
So that's what I mean. Writing out that's there.
Good. So, you'll have a piece going up there on Saturday for that slate. So I'm looking forward to just contributing to SI and having our name get out there a little bit more, and always feels good. So anyway, just a little feel good moment apropos of nothing else except to say, got published on Sports Illustrated. So we are going to talk a Wednesday full of basketball. There's a lot to kind of break down here. Some bigger injury stuff as we go through some of the games and seeing how things kind of line up with how lineups are looking. So let's take a look at some of the games, and I have a couple things I want to complain about, but that'll be a little bit later when we get to the Knicks game. All right, Atlanta goes into Orlando to play here. Orlando -6.5 favorites. Orlando is without Terrence Ross. We've seen they're pretty thin here in like the small forward shooting guard department. Simmons and Fournier are guys that our system liked the other night when they played Charlotte. Do you think giving them, like, do you feel pretty confident in, like, just having to see Fournier and Simmons play kind of mid-30s minutes at this point? Just because when they lose Ross, when you look down the end of that bench, guys like Aflalo and Hezonja don't exactly inspire a lot of confidence. Would you feel confident giving those two guys, like, somewhere in the mid-30s worth of minutes right now?
I think so. I think we have the precedent for that at this point. I think both are still very affordably priced relative to their production, especially when Ross is out. Fournier wasn't amazing against Charlotte, but was excellent against New York and Golden State. I think that is sort of his true talent level of production in this situation, around 30 fantasy points. And I think on a middling slate, that's probably, or a mid-sized slate, I should say, that's probably pretty good production to be able to lock in. Simmons is interesting. I feel like he's a little bit more boom or bust. The minutes can certainly get there, pretty scoring dependent. And I don't know that Orlando is quite as confident in Simmons as they are in Fournier, but I still think he's a good value at 5,800 as well. Understand that with either of these guys, though, there's going to be a little bit of downside risk just because Orlando as a team is just not that amazing.
Yeah, Fournier had foul trouble against Charlotte, which is kind of buzzed off his minutes. They had to kind of sit during a 4-minute stretch or a 4 or 5 minute stretch in the fourth, where he usually would have played kind of coming down into crunch time. So losing those minutes, obviously, really any player that loses 4 to 5 minutes in a game is, no matter what their kind of ceiling for a run is, is pretty huge deal. Now, Orlando does have a pretty big total here. 111 for them tonight shows that Vegas thinks that they're going to put up some points. That's one of the higher overall totals on the slate. It feels like this is a spot you wouldn't mind. Actually, it is the second highest total after the Pelicans and the Warriors are tied. But it feels like having exposure to these guys isn't the worst thing. It's just kind of hard to see. I don't mind, Aaron Gordon, you mentioned Simmons as being a boomer bust guy. I feel like Aaron Gordon falls into that same category, and yet this feels like a good matchup for him tonight.
Yeah, I think Aaron Gordon's good. I mean, he's another just big upside play. He also has that kind of same boom or bust sort of feel to him. But the boom is just so significant on him that it really outweighs some of the bust potential. Like, if you can get one of those 70 plus, like a 78 fantasy point performance against Oklahoma City, obviously that can pay for a couple nights of him kind of not showing up for you. So, yeah, I think Gordon, I mean, he's a little expensive. I don't know that I love him for cash games necessarily. It just depends on how everything else shakes out. But yeah, I mean, the upside is just tremendous, especially against a team with such big men trouble.
And then on Atlanta side, you know, they're still without Mike Muscala. John Collins has been lost for a while here. And they're just, we thought we would kind of, Dwayne Dedmon's out. We thought we would see some consolidation around the big men minutes. Yeah. And that just really hasn't happened. I mean, Ilyasova starts and plays 24. They don't want to play him at all for whatever reason. I mean,
he's been good on a points per minute basis too.
He is. But they just don't want to play him. Like, he played 20 minutes last game, 24 the game before. They don't want to play him. They don't want to play Miles. They're starting to do the old bad team shuffle. And this is what bad.
Well, Kavanaugh's getting about 20, 21 minutes consistently now, but he's just not very good for DFS purposes. Kind of a small contributor across the board. Yeah. It's a, unfortunately, kind of that no man's land.
And yeah. So anyway, whenever you see injuries like that, you kind of think, oh, they're going to start consolidating. We're going to be able to kind of rip up some value here. And that really just hasn't been the case at all with Atlanta, as they're kind of taking that Brooklyn Nets approach of just kind of play everyone right around 27 to 28 minutes or much less, and then kind of call it a day. All right, moving into...
Yeah, I don't blame them. None of these big men are any good. So Plumlee, Ilyasova, I wouldn't want to play any of these guys 35 minutes a game either.
Oh, I wouldn't want to either. I just wish they did so we could have some value from the team. I agree. Ilyasova, I'm not trying to make the case that they're any good. I think Ilyasova is just straight up bad. But I wish they would just give someone 30 minutes so we could feel kind of good about getting them on a cheap, and that's just not the case. All right, so the other 7 o'clock game, Sacramento goes in to play Cleveland. Cleveland, huge favorites here, minus 12.5. The potential blowout risk. Sacramento is now going to be without Willie Cauley-Stein for a little while. He is out. They've also sent Scott Labissiere down to the G League along with Malachi Richardson. So maybe if you thought that you were going to get possibly some value on Scott, get in. They may call him back up today. Like, I'm not sure off the injury news. With losing Cauley-Stein, this is just kind of, he was like the one guy that sometimes would kind of show up on smaller slate kind of stuff because they would bring him in off the bench and play him, you know, 28, 29 minutes, something like that, the big man role. Do you see someone else taking that? Are we kind of just in that Kings no man's land again where it's just too hard to know? Any thoughts on the Kings here?
Yeah, I'm going to keep an eye on this for Costa Kufos news. I mean, he's a guy we've played when he is expected to get around 30 minutes a game in the past, and he's really good on a points per minute basis. I mean, he's the minimum salary at 3,500. Ignore the Milwaukee game just because it doesn't make my point for me. So just pretend like that one didn't happen. But at the previous two games, you know, 10 points in 13 minutes, 12 points in 13 minutes. You know, when he played 28 minutes or more a few times earlier this season, scored 33 and 36 fantasy points respectively. He can definitely do it. I mean, he's not a guy that just stands out there doing nothing at all. If he gets the start, which I would expect to be the case, they certainly don't seem to trust any of these other bigs. So I think you could see a pretty good game at him.
Yeah, well, man, I just I can't trust anything the Kings do. That's my big problem, is that even nothing.
Well, you've always had trust issues. I mean, that's for our other podcast that we do.
Well, I don't know if he got hurt, but Costa Kufos, I know you said you wanted to wipe away the other game, but he started last game, played 9 minutes, had 0 points, zero rebounds, or 0 points.
I told you we're ignoring that game because it doesn't make my point, though.
Gotcha. Okay. So
sorry, did you hear that part? I don't know if I cut out for a second.
Yeah, I just don't. For a GBP, if you thought he was going to play somewhere at 24, 25 minutes, then I think it's fine trusting him in cash. It would be too difficult for me to want to do, just because, and simply because it's the Kings. Like, the Kings just don't, they don't have a plan going into the given night, and therefore trying to predict their plan is completely impossible. Cleveland side, good matchup here in the sense that Sacramento is pretty damn bad on defense. We have LeBron and probably Love as considerations here. Would you be worried about the blowout here? Would you be worried about the blowout here with either of these two guys?
Yeah, of course. I mean, both of them are pretty expensive now relative to their production as it is, and being 13-point favorites on such a large slate means that you're taking on outsized risk, I think, relative to the potential upside. LeBron, after his brief stretch of paying this off, well, a very brief stretch of two games, is now back down to what basically I would expect this is more normal production, like around that 52 sort of fantasy points a game, averaging 54 on the season. Like you said, it's a good matchup, but if in some percentage of the game he's going to just only play 28 minutes or whatever, then I think it becomes a little bit problematic to play him. So I hope to not have LeBron be my big money payoff tonight.
Sacramento is the worst defensive efficiency team in the league, tied with Chicago. They played a slow pace, but again, that's made up some because when your possession, even though they slow the pace down, your possessions on the offensive end are about as good as they can get because they just don't have any clue of what to do on defense. And clearly they have no one that can front. I mean, a few teams do anyway, but they have nobody that can front on LeBron here. So the only issue again is a little bit of pacing issue, and then clearly just a blowout. The Cleveland does have to start probably managing LeBron's minutes and every chance they get, because they're going to end up running him to the ground. It's not even Christmas yet. The guy's playing like 38 minutes a game. So every opportunity they have to probably keep him off the court, they probably should. And I'd be worried about him not seeing his full run in the fourth quarter here. Chicago goes in and plays Indiana. I don't think they're going to get Meredith back tonight. He's still been, there's been kind of, it's been going back and forth questioning about whether he's going to be able to come back and play at all, or if he even wants to play after getting his face punched in by Portis early in the season. I personally have not been in a work environment.
Dude, I don't even want to play anymore. My face is still kind
of
hurts.
Would you? I mean, if you got your face smashed in by one of your teammates, would you want to go run around with that guy for the next couple months? I know that for sure as hell I wouldn't. Chicago has been a team we've thought about targeting some guys in the past. You know, they've moved Chris Dunn into the starting lineup, moving Jerry and Grant. Those minutes haven't materialized in a safe kind of way. Any thoughts on the Chicago side here?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I don't know. You know, Mrodic's potential return at whatever time is not good for them. They already sort of aren't sustaining any fantasy production. They're kind of just all over the place minutes wise, maybe outside of Justin Holiday. Holiday has had some good games, some really big performances actually on the high end, but you know, with Chicago, the minutes are always sort of a question. If I had to pick one guy for relative safety though, I think he'd be the guy.
Chris, like I said, Chris Dunn starts, but then they kind of wait to see how he's shooting on a given night to see if he's going to be able to stay in the game. And if he doesn't start off shooting well, then they kind of he cedes his minutes to Grant. This is just I call it the bad team shuffle. Bad teams just don't know what they're doing and don't know which guys to play and get frustrated with.
Yeah, Chris Dunn's not the guy to play, by the way, starter or no. I mean, he just, the performance doesn't, the price is just simply way too high for, he would be an interesting guy at maybe 6,000, maybe 5,800, but no, not at 67.
And then on the Indiana side, we have a Chicago team that also has its own defensive struggles. They rank, like I said, they rank tied with Sacramento for worst defensive team in the league here. Victor Oladipo is having a huge season. I thought for a while it was just kind of being propped up just on on the defensive stats and maybe some luck box scoring. But man, is he taking a lot of shots. Like, he is one of the highest usage, depending what you read, because different people calculate usage differently. The NBA.com version of usage has him as a top 7 overall usage guy. Hollinger has him a little bit lower, like in the top 20. Still taking a ton of shots this season, over 17 and right around 17 and a half shots. Is he a guy, just on the shot volume and the defensive stats, do you see him as like a cash game consideration here?
No way. Not on 9,400. It's way too expensive. Like, the average season production of 41 minutes or 41 fantasy points per game, perhaps just a littlest bit unfair just because, you know, new team and kind of learning his way. But that hasn't really been the case. Like, a lot of his good games actually came somewhat early in this season. I think Oladipo still has a ton of variance in him, scored 68 points 2 games ago, and then 33 points in a much better matchup with the Knicks. 9,400 is just, this is just not what you pay for a guy with Oladipo's profile, in my opinion. So I won't play Oladipo in any format, really.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Pushing him up to almost 10,000 is...
That's stupid. He won't be there. He'll be 8,000, or he'll be like 8,300 at the end of the season. So
it's nuts. I never...
Don't pay the highest overall price for Oladipo.
It's crazy. If you said at the beginning of the season, you'd be like, Oladipo is going to be close to a $10,000 player. It'd be hard to believe, because you'd be like, how?
Be hard to believe if he only was averaging 41 fantasy points a game. It's just like, sometimes it's like when Nikola Jokic got bumped up to around 10,000 plus, he was having Oladipo's best game like over and over and over again. And they were like, okay, well, let's do it. Oladipo, he's been good, fine on these prices in the last 4 games, but he's not, even in the last 4 games, he's not like averaging 65 fantasy points a game. Like, it just seems overboard to me. I don't know who's going to play him and what the point of that would be, especially even, I know Chicago's bad, but even that they play so slowly, it just doesn't really provide for a lot of upside either. So yeah, this one's not for me.
And sort of like the double-edged, well, it's not a double-edged sword, sort of the double effect of what's happened with him is that he has, his price is too high, and then his usage rate is such that he kind of cuts into the offensive production of everyone else. Like, the shots per minute are down for guys like Miles Turner. Darren Collison at times can have some good games in him, and the price for him he had a huge game last game, but the price for him is, you know, still sort of lowish at 6,400 on FanDuel. And yet, like, when you just play with a guy that just that takes this many shots, it's just that your opportunities are cut into. So while the Indiana guys are in a good matchup here, and some of them are priced in the mid tier, and you can maybe kind of consider them, you know, guys like Thad Young, like I mentioned Collison before, are all sort of decent and all probably a little bit too expensive is kind of how I see them. I don't know. Do you see them any differently, or do you have like any interest in these other guys in the Pacers?
Yeah, I don't really think so. I mean, Collison's flashed some upside recently. Turner's been, you know, Turner is always just sort of interesting, but he's too expensive right now. I think he's still a reasonable big tournament option, although recently he's played more like a mid-tier like a $5,000 player rather than a $7,600 player. So yeah, I don't think there's a ton of intrigue on the Pacers. Another guy our system will draw at from time to time in really good matchups is Bojan Bogdanovic, but I think he gets kind of pinged by the slow pace here as well. So now the Pacers don't really interest me much.
Yeah, Turner, definitely a GPP play. He has one of the higher standard deviations among starters, like that kind of in his price range and his scoring tier. So he has the big game. And that's basically because he has, you know, a few big games in him. And like you said, the lows are there as well. So all these guys kind of strike me as tournament plays. And like you said, even Oladipo, it's really hard to think about getting there on his price. Before we get into the 7:30 games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about draftboard.com. Draftboard's a great place to go if you want to play, you know, smaller contests and at a site that really emphasizes player fairness. They take a lot of little steps to ensure that pros can't go over there and just take everybody's money away. So your head-to-heads will be placed randomly against other players, which just keeps pros out in general because they understand that that's a lower expectation game for them. They offer $1 that you can just go there and sign up and just start playing with. So you can use promo code DFSR to get that. And every weekend for the NFL, they give away $10,000 if someone scores the highest overall total for the season on their site. So someone just won the $10,000 last week. We'll see. Maybe someone will win it again this Sunday. I think they've given it away like 3 or 4 times this season. So pretty cool site, draftboard.com. Use promo code DFSR to get started.
All right, 7:30 games. Dallas goes in and plays Boston. Boston 9-point favorites here. The game has a very low total, only 202 implied, just which makes sense. Boston's one of the better defensive, or maybe the best defensive efficiency team in the league. Dallas is a very slow team. Any interest in this game at all, or is this kind of end up being, sometimes these games end up being kind of just like schedule games in the sense that it's just two slow teams, defense is pretty good, and it's hard to think about rostering anyone, at least for cash, from this affair.
Yeah, they're the 5th and 6th slowest teams in the league, and that already makes it tough. You throw in Boston's, like you pointed out, best overall defensive efficiency in the NBA, and you get a pretty problematic situation. In situations like that, sometimes you look around and see if there's any kind of big opportunity that's burbling to the surface right now. There's no news right now. So yeah, this game, really from top to bottom, probably it's a complete stay away for cash, and you know, maybe you take the stab if you think that, because you realize no one's going to play anyone from this game for big tournaments. That's really the only use I can think of for this game.
Yeah, Dennis Smith has upside if he gets his minutes up into like the mid-30s, even the low-30s, but then there's just too many games in his log where it's just 28, 27 minutes.
He's never had, like, he has one big upside game, or I guess two. He has two big upside games over the course of the whole season, and those were in pretty solid matchups with Cleveland and Washington, so I don't even see him as an upside play.
Last 7:30 game is Memphis goes in and plays New York. The Knicks did the ultimate classic bad team move the other day, which is to they're already without their probably, I mean, arguably their two best players. Let's call it Tim Hardaway Jr., their second best player, just for sake of argument. And Porzingis, they're playing without him. They're starting Beasley and Dotson. I can't even remember his name. It's like Dwayne. That's not Dwayne Dotson. But anyway, they're playing those two guys. They're getting completely run. And then they start the second half and just pull out all the starters and just play the bench, like the deep bench of like Ron Baker and that cast of characters for the rest of the game. I mean, I complained about this to you for a long time off the air yesterday, because this is just like, for me, I'm just going to do it for like 2 more minutes here, but this is the most maddening kind of situation for me from a DFS standpoint, because what part of the team did Jeff Hornacek not realize sucked going in? Like, this is Michael Beasley. The guy plays 4 minutes a game. Like, you clearly think he sucks. Like, are you punishing him?
The problem is not that he sucks, Doug. You need to rest him, you know? You rest the starters, and then you bring in the backups.
Or you're just like mad at him for not playing well. Again, you can't get mad at him. You've already signaled that you don't think he's good by never playing him during the season, right?
Like, just kick him off the team. If you keep playing the game in blowouts when their starters are hurt, what's the point of him being there?
Right, you have no point. Like that, this is the thing I never understand. But I think you made a good point. You said you think it's just like in coaches' DNA that they're like not even factoring that in at the point. They're just like, these guys stink. Yeah, right. Do you honestly think that's what it is? It's like a habit to say,
must take the starters out. We are losing by 20 in the fourth quarter. Yeah, 100%. I don't think there's really any doubt. They look over, see who's still wearing their warm-up, you know, hoodies or whatever, and they're like, hey, take that off and get in the game. And they're just not even thinking about it. Mostly, I think they're just probably so irritated. Like, I mean, you've been involved in contests where the game is just kind of over. Like, remember in your college soccer days, Doug, you're down by like 4 with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You're not like sitting there grinding out like the X's and O's. You're just like running around hoping not to get further embarrassed and thinking about what party you're going to go to on the weekend. There has to be some amount of that in the NBA. It's a really long season. And I just don't think I think they just aren't expending mental energy in these blowout games that are already decided.
Yeah, and I was not on my all-time tilt because I'm just kind of used to this at this point, but like that was just – it's one of those – it's like, oh, that's a new one for the season. You know, we get the injuries, we get the ejections. I would say also too, this is a side note, but I think I've had – 5 players in the last week and a half get ejected. I think that's more than I had the entire combined season last year. I'm running very bad on ejections right now. Anyway, getting into the rest of this game, Porzingis will come back tonight and play. Hardaway is still out. Memphis is going to get Chandler Parsons back, although he came back 2 days ago, 2 games ago, and did not start. So I suspect they keep the same starting lineup. But let's start on the Memphis side. Knicks are a bad defensive team. They are slight under the Memphis is slight underdogs here, -2.5 on the Knicks side. Anything you like for the Grizzlies?
Yeah, I guess I don't totally understand that line just because in my mind, the Knicks are just so bad. I mean, I guess they'll have Kristaps is probable here, so he'll be back in the lineup, I guess. I don't know that he'll play his full run of minutes, so I don't know if I'm interested in him for DFS purposes. He's already sort of erratic on that price. On the Memphis side of the ball, you know, they have their own version of the bad player shuffle. It's small forward. Like all these guys have been kind of getting random amounts of minutes, kind of been coming and going. But the guy I'm really interested here is Tyreke Evans. I mean, he's been insane the last 2 games against Cleveland and Minnesota, coming off a stretch where he was utterly terrible for 4 games on these prices. But I think the Knicks are a good enough matchup that even at 7,800, you can probably consider him. What do you think about Tyreke? He's a guy that we often will spend at least 5 minutes discussing before every lineup lock that he's a part of.
He's getting expensive. That's the one part. He's labeled as a shooting guard. He's not playing shooting guard. He's playing point guard for them.
I don't mind playing a point guard and shooting guard. You know, that's really
big. Oh, I love it. I want to usually because that's just that. At least on FanDuel, that's the exact situation. Typically, your typical shooting guard or you're like your, I don't know, straight out of the box kind of shooting guard is Cornelius, a high bomb. You know? Yeah, exactly. Avery Bradley. These guys are shooters. You're hoping for some defensive stats and you're kind of just hoping that you kind of get there mostly through the scoring. Tyreke is different in that he's the ball handler. He's still taking a high volume shot. They need his scoring, but he's also controlling the pace of the game and just has the majority of the ball handling duty. So that's there's very rare situations where you get, like, you know, you had Chris Dunn playing point guard and Rasha as a shooting guard for a little while. Yeah. Evans, at some point, I would suspect FanDuel does move his position over. And I he's not a lock play for me because, again, the price is getting up there and there are some other shooting guard values tonight. But yes, of all the guys on that team, he's definitely the one I would think about playing, and it's pretty close in cash. New York side of the ball, like you said, Kristaps, the minutes you can't trust them, especially coming back from injury. And the rest of this team, I don't know. Courtney Lee's played a lot of minutes, and it's just they're still playing Memphis, and I just don't know if you want to go there. All right, 8 o'clock game. Denver goes in and plays the Pelicans. Pelicans coming off a game where they probably should have beat the Warriors considering how much they were winning by 20 at halftime and then gave it up. Now, again, I said this to someone the other day, but they were winning it by 20 at halftime, but it was very smoke and mirrors. They went into halftime having shot 55% from three, and that just was not going to continue for this team. It was really not going to continue for any team, really, outside of maybe the Warriors, to keep shooting for three. So I thought there was definitely a Warriors run in them, and it was just going to be if there was going to be enough time, and there was, and they beat them. But Pelicans get a better matchup here tonight against Denver. They're still going to be without Davis. Is Boogie at this point? Are Boogie and I would say Holiday and maybe even Rondo? Are they basically like cash game locks considering the way they're playing? Maybe in Darius Miller too. What are your thoughts on the Pelicans?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly love Boogie. The way I would prioritize them, I would go Boogie, and then I like Rondo, and then I think I like Miller, and then I like Holiday. I take it back. I like Holiday over Miller. I think the issue I have with Holiday is like he was really good in the Golden State game, but he wasn't totally there against Portland. And he, with Rondo being out there, the more minutes Rondo plays, the worse it is for Holiday, right? Because when Holiday was really good, he was a point guard. He was dishing the ball. He was a lot more actively involved. It felt like on both ends of the floor. When he's in more of the shooting guard role with the ball hog, and Rondo's not a ball hog in that he passes at the end of his possessions, but Holiday just won't be as actively involved on the offense. And the way he kind of plays, he's just not as active off ball as he is when he has the ball. So I don't mind Holiday, but 7,100 is just a little bit pricey for me. But I do think Boogie and Rondo are two guys I'm very, very interested in playing in cash.
I think Holiday is kind of a lock for me in cash. The way they ran more of their offense against the Warriors, it was more of Rondo kind of at the two wing guy. Like he kind of deposited himself into the corners a lot of the time. And kind of that was how he played out possessions. Like he wasn't as active as like the on ball Rondo, as like we've seen in the past. There kind of was more Holiday running.
We still have 10 assists.
I'm not saying he's a stands there and does nothing. I'm just saying that he wasn't. It's just not. They're sharing the duties more than anything else. I think Holiday's price is at 7,100 is probably too low. Now I do think the shot volume in the Warriors was not something that you're going to expect to see every game because he's just not going to shoot. He's not going to shoot 21 times. He got a little bit lucky that he got more usage because Boogie got ejected at the end of the game and also was in a little bit of foul trouble early. So Boogie played probably 6 to 7 more less minutes than usual, and that's where I think you saw Holiday's and really everyone else's shots tick up across the board. I still really, really like Holiday in this. Miller's price has come up. I mean, he's still coming off the bench and playing a lot of minutes. Do you feel comfortable with him? I guess it's only 4,000. Do you still feel comfortable playing him as the price kind of creeps up?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. Like, he's just not been pretty unexciting at this price. So he's not the type of guy I would prioritize. But if he showed up, I wouldn't mind leaving him in there.
Yep. So anyway, I think we're going to be looking. I very much think we'll play at least 2 Pelicans in cash tonight, maybe 3. I mean, I gave Rondo 30 minutes.
That's fine.
I think the 30 minutes on Rondo is still probably too high. I want to be bullish on him because I think he's been excellent point per minute, especially at these prices.
Well, why wouldn't he have played more minutes against Golden State, I guess is my question. Like, so he played 28 minutes against them. What was stopping him from playing the 30 minutes?
I just don't think they want to play him 30 minutes. I've given him 30 minutes just because I kind of like him as a play, and I think that 30, and I'm admitting that I think 30 minutes is probably a little too high. Denver side, Pelicans are not that great on defense. They are still going to be without Jokic here. They started Mason Plumlee last game, but then Plumlee did not start the second half because they were losing by so much that they had to start Will Barton to try to play some of the catch-up game. Would we be comfortable going back? I mean, Plumlee, I think, is clearly going to draw the start again here, but just that we saw, and it seems like they're going to want to have to play him minutes because like they don't have a ton of guys that can really front on Boogie. Would you feel comfortable bringing him back up to 30 minutes?
I guess. I don't think I want to play him, so I don't know that, like, especially not on FanDuel at the $5,800 price tag, I'm not going to play him. I think Fried is pretty interesting in this game. He has been paying, 26, 27 minutes. He's been paying off the price recently, and I think he's going to have a good matchup against whoever the Pelicans roll out their power forward. Like, I think he would be in a very, very plus spot against Darius Miller, for instance, or Dante Cunningham. So I think Fried's pretty interesting. People are going to talk themselves into Will Barton, which I think is the age old question is what price is too high for Will Barton and how many minutes is Will Barton going to get? What do you think about that? I mean, 41 minutes against Dallas, 28 against LA, 35, 31, 17 against Memphis. What's the real story with Will Barton here?
Well, luckily FanDuel has him so expensive that I don't even think you need to worry about it because he's 7,500 and even at 35 minutes, if we knew he was going to start, then I would give him 35 minutes and I feel pretty comfortable with it. Outside of that, though, we've been through multiple seasons of Will Barton here. Like, it's just when you think, oh, these are his bench minutes. He's one of the few guys. He's the guy that's going to play off a lot of minutes on the bench. And then he plays a 24-minute game. This is always the problem with bench guys. And it's not a problem with the Darius Miller types when it's 4,000 because, look, you can survive a 20-minute game and maybe he doesn't get there. And if your $4,000 guy kills you, it's likely – it's not great, but it's not the end of the world. When your $7,500 guy plays 25 minutes, you're pretty dead. And so I just don't think – I think thankfully FanDuel has him priced at a point that his points per dollar for us are very low. And that's even at 30 minutes.
Sure.
Even if we gave him 35, it wouldn't push him – like, for instance, at 35 minutes, it wouldn't push his projection up over Drew Holiday's, right? For
yeah,
less.
Then I think
like
that's
you're playing Holiday for less. So I think in that scenario, like, just as to do like a one-to-one comparison, or like, let's say you get, he's 300 less than Tyreek Evans. Like, even at the same minutes, I'd play Tyreek. You know what I mean? Yeah, so, like, I think that thankfully we're not going to have to worry too much about it. The Plumlee thing I'm going to kind of wrestle with as we go through today. He's only 4,700 on DraftKings, which is pretty cheap. If you thought he could, like, creep toward a double-double territory, which he has it in him if you were to play a lot of minutes against Boogie. You have to worry a little bit about the run also. All right, keep going here. Other 8 o'clock game, Detroit goes in to play Milwaukee. Milwaukee is a -4 favorite. Let's start with Milwaukee side. Giannis, obviously, every time he plays, he's a candidate to score just the most overall points on a slate. Detroit's not a great matchup. They don't have a ton of wing defense that they can throw as well. I mean, I guess maybe Stanley Johnson. They did start Anthony Tolliver last game. I don't think they go back that direction against in the Giannis matchup. What are your thoughts on this game here?
Yeah, well, Milwaukee, I think, is kind of interesting. Giannis, obviously, like you said, he tends to be the best big money payoff on any given night just based on the upside and the floor, too, really. I mean, he's just really, really good, obviously super actively involved on all ends of the floor and on the glass. So I do like Giannis, you know, as a potential payoff. I think Eric Bledsoe is actually kind of interesting, too. He's another guy I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the minutes for, because he's vacillated between 23 and 34 minutes in his last four games. What's the true story with Bledsoe, and can we play him in a slow-ish matchup with Detroit?
I'm not worried about the minutes. I think the minutes they want to play him are right around 33 and 34. It's the shots. He's only taken 18. He's played 67 minutes in the last two games and taken 18 total shots. Is a shot volume that I have a concern with, really. And so, like, we've seen double digit shots out of him with basically the full team. Like, he had a run. He had a 17 shot game. The 26 shot game against Phoenix is an outlier because Giannis didn't play that game, so you really can't use that one. I think the real shots for him are right around 10 or 11, and I just don't know if that's enough for his price. Now, the price has come down. He's only 6,900 on FanDuel, so he's getting priced into the point where maybe he doesn't need to shoot 15 times a game to kind of get there at 6,900. And Detroit's defense versus point guards is pretty bad between the Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson combo, but I don't know. You're probably saying it because I think right now he's coming into like a lot of FanDuel lineups for us. Yeah. And I just, it probably ends up being correct because I need to just remember that this was a guy that has been 8,000 in the past. And I'm trying to remember him at that point. And that's just not who he is anymore.
Some baseline issues with him playing on other teams, on faster teams, you know, like there's some complicating factors with Bledsoe that I think should be considered here.
Yeah, so I'll take a look at make sure his usage is correct because it's probably if we had him at like so for instance right now I'm just not looking at it right this second, but if we had him at like 14 shots a game or something like that, then I'd be willing to pretty confidently lower him or 14 shots. Yeah, I'm looking at actually while I was saying that I looked at it. Yeah, we haven't projected for 15 shots, so I think there's probably a case to be made to lower his usage.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Something along the order of 10-15%, and feel pretty confident that that's going to be the case moving forward. And I can see that you're in the system doing it now, so I'm not going to. All right. Any other thoughts here? Detroit side, like I said, Tolliver started last game, was pretty damn bad. I mean, I got very lucky with this news because Tolliver's just the kind of guy for our system. If you gave him like 28 minutes because he's starting at 3,000, he's like just the guy that would get slotted into like power forward on FanDuel just because you're kind of always looking to fill that spot. And he went out there, played his first like 17 minutes of the game and had a complete zero line. Like, he had done nothing on the court. He had just no points, no rebounds, no assists. But the news came out after lock, so like it never got there. And I was just like thanking the heavens that like Detroit just reported really late on their starting lineups. Any interest at all in the Detroit side of the ball?
Yeah, Detroit's another tricky one. I feel like both of these teams have similar issues for me for DFS purposes, which is that they tend to play the guys who play a good amount of minutes, and then they only wind up being plays in really good matchups. And you know, Detroit's a worse matchup than Milwaukee, I would say, on a high level, just because Milwaukee plays pretty poorly defensively. But Milwaukee actually playing more slowly than Detroit this year, bottom four pace team. So I think this game, you know, if we agree that Bledsoe is probably a little bit overrated in our system, you know, winds up kind of being mostly a skip, potentially with the exception of like Avery Bradley, who's probably still a little bit underpriced relative to his opportunity. But talk about a guy whose shots have fallen off, 9 total points from the field in the last two games. And you would need all 62 minutes he's played in the last two games haven't been enough to pay his $5,000 price tag. So I'm not as bullish on Avery Bradley as, you know, maybe just dividing his season averages by his minutes and matchup and calling it a day.
I don't mind Bradley here. He's getting really cheap. I know he's been really bad, but the 4,900 on FanDuel, if you look at it, it doesn't explain it all the way, but he's shot 1 for his last 13 from 3, and that's just like not going to continue for him. He's something around the range of probably a 40% three-point shooter, somewhere like that. So I think that from that point of view, I think we are probably buying a little low on him. And I know people never want to see these names, like these kind of names fall in, because it's just gross to look
at
a guy
who's been 4 for 20 in his last two games. That probably does explain most of it.
It does, because if you go back and look to, like, I mean, there were some slightly better matchups for Washington and Phoenix, not Boston, but he's shooting double digit times a game. He's getting like he's a 40% 3-point shooter. And over the last five games, he shot 26%. And when a guy, you know, we mentioned this with shooting guards, if you have a shooting guard that just shoot is running bad from the field, that's the end of that shooting guard, because that's kind of all these guys do, right? Like, he'll throw in some defensive stats here and there, and he'll throw in the random assist.
Avery Bradley went three games without getting a rebound recently. That's pretty damn difficult to do.
So if you think like those, he's not a huge rebound guy, so he's not going to, he only averages like 3 per game, but those little, at his price, those little rebounds that, you know, if he just brings his rebounds back up to his season average, and if he just brings his shooting back to his season average, then all of a sudden he's excellent. He's an excellent play on FanDuel, right? Like, for cash game purposes. Yeah, so I think that's where, you know, it, again, you can get caught looking at game logs and just seeing that the guy's been bad and extrapolate that he's going to be bad over the long term. And I think just with Bradley, it's not the case. I'm very much into playing him at 4,900.
Well, I really like the price. I just don't know if I like the matchup. I mean, like, if he's already been bad and he's already shooting a little bit less, and it's, again, it's a 2-game sample size, so we don't want to get carried away or anything. But if he's been bad and the shots have gone down, which would make sense, like if the confidence is somewhat low or the team's confidence in him is low, going into a bottom four pace team, I don't think he's a lock by any stretch. I think if this were like Phoenix or something, or even like New Orleans or Denver, like the previous game, then I would be all over it. But I just think there are some concerns outside of just the last 2 games being not so great.
Yeah, like I said, it's actually the pace down in the matchup, the only reason that he's not in 100% of lineups right now, I would suspect. But if you look at other guys in his price range, which is not a perfect comp, because you're not obligated to slot in a $4,900 shooting guard. Like, you can just shift the whole lineup around. It's gonna be close. Anyway, I'm mostly just not worried about looking back at his recent performance and worrying that that's gonna be him for the rest of the season. All right, the big news here, obviously, moving into this next game, 8:00, Golden State goes and plays the Hornets. Steph turned his ankle at the end of the last game. He's gonna be out for a couple weeks now with the sprain. So let's start, obviously, with the Warriors side of the ball. Last time Steph sat, Patrick McCaw started. Sorry, I was getting confused about how I wanted to word this. Patrick McCaw started at point guard, but Kevin Durant, and played a lot of minutes, but also Kevin Durant had also sat that game. Now, we had seen McCaw get the start for Durant in the past, and it seemed like McCaw, in this case, was starting for Curry, and then, like, Caspi was starting for Durant, right? But McCaw is a pretty versatile guy, so it's a little confusing about what their plan is. Clearly, what they don't want to do, they do not want to start Sean Livingston. So I'm not worried about like jacking his minutes up to the hilt to make sure he gets anywhere. That's not their plan. Usage bumps across the board. How are we viewing attacking the Warriors tonight?
Well, McCaw also questionable here. I mean, he started, but then bruised his nose, apparently. Oh, and Patrick got a little nose bruise. Come on out, buddy. Left the game, never went back in. Currently listed as questionable. So I think we'll need to wait on that news. I think basically we're waiting for a starting lineup. I think we'll probably get some news about who's going to start for McCaw. Golden State tends to be pretty good about news. And I think that's what we need to wait on. As for the rest of the guys, I mean, you're going to spread a lot of usage around when Steph's off the court, both, you know, shots and simple time of possession, you know, putting the ball in guys like Clay's hands more, Durant's hands more, Draymond Green, whoever else, is going to increase their usage. It's going to increase their shot totals, their assists, and everything else too. So I think a lot of Golden State's in play tonight. It also decreases the risk of a blowout too. So yeah, a lot of interest on the Golden State side. But for right now, I'm going to need to wait on news before I make any definitive claims.
Yeah, but like you said, though, I think for right now, we can pretty safely we could probably slot in at least Clay and Durant and feel pretty good about it, at least for cash games. Those guys are close to top lineups. Yeah, as it is right now. Like, for instance, actually, they're going to be in the top lineup now that we've lowered Bledsoe a little bit. So again, it's early. It's only 9:30 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. So lots and lots of time till we get anywhere close. But those guys will probably be chalk. And you make a good point about just the ability of Charlotte to probably stay in this game without Steph. Now, Golden State is a -6 favorite, but removing a guy like Steph who, you know, because we usually the big problem with Golden State is not only do they have like 3 of the top 10 best players in basketball on their team, but one or two of those, and maybe more with Draymond, so maybe like 4 of the top 14 guys or something like that. 2 of them are always on the court together.
And very Bill Simmons-esque claim right there, by the way. 4 of the top 14. It's like right ahead of his playbook. But go ahead.
Sorry. Did he say stuff like that?
Well, it just makes it sound like you're keeping a really specific list of like guys.
No, I'm not. I don't do that. I don't mean to sound like that. I don't have a list like that. I was making the point that they just have a lot of really good players on their team.
You're playing as well.
So you're almost always at least playing against 2 of them and then sometimes 4 of them. But without that, Curry hammer, the blowout doesn't come into question as much. Would you consider targeting some guys on the Hornets side of the ball here if you thought they were going to keep it close?
Maybe. I mean, certainly for big tournaments, that's always an interesting strat because Golden State, even without Curry, will play pretty fast when the games are close and try to kind of run teams out of the gym. For that reason, I think you could consider some of the guys on Charlotte whose roles are a little bit more secure. Kemba Walker, I think, you know, he kind of comes and goes, but last game comes out with just a vengeance against Orlando, putting up 54 fantasy points. Pretty expensive. And again, kind of a big tournament play there, but definitely a guy who just can go off in any given game. But after, outside of him, I don't know. Charlotte, generally speaking, is just not the most exciting team to stack. They can have some minutes weirdness among their wing players and likewise with their bigs. So they're a tough one to pin down sometimes.
Yep, I kind of agree. I do think that from a tournament stacking standpoint, you do have some upside on Walker. Batum was a high owned guy last time, kind of started pulling it back together. He had been struggling a little bit. The price has come up for him some, so it's hard to consider probably playing him again. Like I said,
again, you don't want to go crazy on the game logs, but Batum at 6,500, like you get one good game against Orlando and then three awful, like lose the game by yourself sort of performances in the other three games. I just don't think Charlotte's bringing the level of consistency that you'd like for Cashew.
Yeah, I am a little low on Batum's minutes, I'm realizing, so I'll jack him up, and I don't think it probably is going to matter in terms of getting him in the top lineups. All right, moving into, we got two more games left to go here. Moving in and going at the 8:30 mark and talking about Miami and the Spurs. Spurs do they kind of switched their lineup around last game where they started Rudy Gay, and I knew he was starting ahead of time, and I was a little kind of confused about what the minutes plan was going to be because he sat out a bunch, and Spurs are always really good about managing the minutes. And then Gay went out and just played a lot and was very good. His price has come up a lot on FanDuel. He was under 5,000. He's up over 6 now, but he played 31 minutes and was pretty good. Would you consider, even with the price climb on Rudy Gay, consider kind of maybe slotting him into some cash games tonight?
Potentially. I really like the minutes. I wish we had a little bit more track record on him playing this level of minutes. And he also is dealing with a little bit of a heel injury. And I know the Spurs are often cautious when it comes to deploying guys who are a little bit banged up. But yeah, I mean, certainly with Kyle Anderson being out, the minutes probably are more secure than usual. Not an ideal matchup with Miami, but totally cash game viable, I would say.
Yeah, I share that same kind of just like unease about just that this is the Spurs, and That's actually why I was really bearish on the minutes going in, because I was like, there's no way they play him like more than 30 minutes after he's barely played at all. And well, I guess he only sat out one game, but still, like anytime that they have even just a hint of injury stuff, they're just waiting. They're waiting for the playoffs, right? Like they're not kind of, they don't need to go all in with some of these guys. But
right. I do think actually Danny Green, interesting for kind of that same reason, because he has been a guy, like the Spurs tend to just pick guys that can play a lot of minutes, and Green is one of those. And he also can kind of flex over to the small forward because he's a little longer and pretty good defensively. So Danny Green at 4,500, and he was very, very good in that last game with Anderson out. So I think he's an interesting play tonight, potentially.
All right, and finishing off here, Minnesota goes in and plays the Clippers. Clippers are a complete and utter mess. I know just about every player in the NBA that's on an active roster just from staring. I'm saying this for this point. Having stared at basketball projections for the better part of just like the last half a decade or whatever, just staring at these names and how we kind of produce our system, you just get to know all these guys. And the Clippers,
man, no wonder Sports Illustrated wanted you to write for them, dude. That's pretty
cool. Clippers fielded a starting lineup last game that even I had to do like a double take on, because I was like, oh boy, okay, Jameel Wilson, all right, he's starting. What we got here? We got CJ Williams, okay. We got Juwan. I mean, they started a complete cast of characters. Now, I think they did that because they don't want to start. They only have two guys that can really score, Lou Williams and Austin Rivers, and they just were saying we just need to stagger these guys a little bit because when they share the court together, if they get caught in the same rotations, then we're having these other guys just all share the court together, and it's totally over. So Lou Williams, for you, he doesn't feel like the same kind of thing as like Will Barton coming off the bench. Like Lou Williams feels like the one guy coming off the bench that I feel pretty confident with his minutes. Do you feel the same way on him?
I do feel confident about the minutes. I'm just not sure on the price. You know, 8,000 is just a ton to pay for a shooting guard in general. And that tends to only support guys like, you know, DeMar DeRozan, you know, people with just tons of time of possession, huge role in the offense. Backups at 8,000 are pretty darn hard to justify. And I get why they're doing it too. I share your sentiment about that starting lineup. Like, I think if you would have read that to me at the beginning of the season, I would have assumed you were reading me like Kentucky's lineup or something.
Or like the G League team. Like their G League team, and DeAndre got sent down for like a rehab stint or something like that. I just don't know. Like you would have thought, what the hell happened here?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so with Williams, I mean, sure, maybe the minutes are secure, but I also think it's very hard to pin down teams with nothing to lose, you know, what their plan is going to be. And the Clips are really in that full-on nothing to lose territory with this cast right now. So I don't know. I can't imagine wanting to play Williams in any format, really.
Yeah, no, he's probably just a little bit too expensive. And then Minnesota, I mean, this is not the defensive this is not a defensive team like from the Clippers like we've seen in the past. They have DeAndre, and then they have kind of nobody else. I mean, Austin Rivers.
And they honestly were never – their reputation was better than their actual skill defensively, even when Blake was there. DeAndre, really good, you know, kind of helping and swatting layups in the lane and stuff, but not really an on-ball defender.
Well, from that point of view, would you want to play any of these Timberwolves guys? We know the minutes are there. The line isn't spread to the point where anyone thinks is going to be a complete blowout. Just based on some of the minutes floors you get in guys like Towns and Wiggins and Butler, and I guess Taj Gibson, would you consider playing any of these guys in cash?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the Clippers are, like, you know, we tend to talk about when we want to roll out guys with consistent minutes and we want to roll them out against bad defensive teams. The Clippers this season, the fourth worst defensive efficiency. And to your point, they're playing worse defensive players now than they were even in the beginning of the season. And so for that reason, you know, I guess it ranks as something of a plus matchup. The only issue is that with their current just terrible team, they're also playing pretty slowly. And that makes sense. You know, it's difficult for them to get the ball up and down the court, much less break out in transition and either score transition buckets, but also to give up transition buckets to other teams. So I don't know that I want to play any Minnesota guys here. It's the type of thing where if the system called a certain guy out as a good points per dollar value, I could live with it. So picture a guy like Taj Gibson maybe. But outside of him, I just don't know if there's enough points per dollar value just kind of in a vacuum for me to be too interested here.
Yep, I agree on Taj, and I probably agree on the rest of the thing, just because they're also with that minutes floor comes a salary floor that's just been raised.
Comes inflation, you know. Butler, $9,000 salary, averaging 37 fantasy points this year, and understand that he's been really, really good on this price, and he probably will see some ownership based on the last three games. And actually, I take it back. So he, you know, they played the Clippers 2 games ago, and he just crushed them for 54 fantasy points. So maybe he's another guy you could consider playing. But yeah, Towns, you know, kind of expensive for his production. I just think they're kind of expensive.
Yep, I totally agree. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/MBA gets you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. So go check that out. Free for 3 days, $34.95 a month after that. We'll be back again on Friday talking more basketball. Enjoy the big night in the NBA, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Peace.